My cheeks burn. Freaking Abby never misses a freaking thing. I'm not expecting to see him again until lunch, but he materializes at my locker right before. I think we should go somewhere, he says. Off campus? Technically, only the seniors are allowed, but it's not like the security guards know we're not seniors. So I imagine. Have you done this before? Nope, he says, and he presses his fingertips softly against mine, just for a moment. Me neither, I say. Okay. So we walk out the side door and briskly through the parking lot with as much confidence as we can muster. The air is sharply cold from an hour or two of early morning rain. Bram's Honda Civic is old and comfy and meticulously neat, and he cranks up the heat as soon as we get inside. An auxiliary cable strings out from the cigarette lighter, attached to an iPod. He tells me to pick the music. I'm not sure if Bram knows that handing me his iPod is like handing me the window to his soul. And of course his music selection is perfect. A lot of classic soul and newer hip-hop, a surprising amount of bluegrass, a single Guilty Pleasure song by Justin Bieber, and without exception, every album or musician I've ever mentioned in my emails. I think I'm in love. So where are we going? I ask. He glances at me and smiles. I have an idea. So I lean back against the headrest, spinning through Bram's music list as the heater revives my fingers. It's beginning to rain again. I watch the droplets slide in tapering diagonals across the window. I make a decision and press play, and Otis Redding's voice comes quietly through the speakers. Try a little tenderness. I turn up the volume. And then I touch Bram's elbow. You're so quiet, I say. Now or in general? Well, both. I'm quiet around you, he says, smiling. I smile back. I'm one of the cute guys who gets you tongue-tied? He squeezes the steering wheel. You're the cute guy. He pulls into a shopping center not far from school and parks in front of Publix. We're going grocery shopping? I ask. It looks like it, he says, with a spark of a smile. Mysterious Bram. We cover our heads with our hands as we run through the rain. As we step into the brightly lit entryway, my phone buzzes through my jeans. I've missed 3 text messages, all from Abby. Are you coming to lunch? Where are you? Bram's gone too. How strange. But there's Bram carrying a grocery basket, and his curls are damp, and his eyes are luminous. 27 minutes until the end of lunch, he says. Maybe we should divide and conquer. You got it. Where to, boss? He directs me to the dairy aisle for a pint of milk. So what did you get? I ask when we reconvene at the checkout. Lunch, he says, tilting his basket toward me. Inside, there are 2 plastic cup containers of miniature Oreos and a box of plastic spoons. I almost kiss him right there in front of the U-scan. He insists on paying for everything. The rain is picked up, but we make a break for it, falling breathlessly into the seats and letting the door slam shut. I rub my glasses against my shirt to dry them. Then Bram twists the ignition, and the heat kicks back on, and the only sound is the tap of raindrops against the window. He looks down at his hands, and I can see he's grinning. Abraham, I say, trying it out. And there's this soft ache below my stomach. His eyes flick toward me. And the rain makes a kind of curtain, which is probably for the best, because all of a sudden I'm leaning over the gear stick, and my hands are on his shoulders, and I'm trying to keep breathing. All I can see are Bram's lips, which fall gently open the moment I lean in to kiss him. And I can't even describe it. It's stillness and pressure and rhythm and breathing. We can't figure out our noses at first, but then we do. And then I realize my eyes are still open, so I shut them. And his fingertips graze the nape of my neck in constant, quiet motion. He pauses for a moment, and my eyes flutter open, and he smiles, so I smile back. And then he leans in to kiss me again, sweet and feather soft. And it's almost too perfect, almost too Disney. This can't actually be me. 10 minutes later, we're holding hands and eating Oreo mush, and it's the perfect lunch. More Oreos than milk. And I never would have remembered spoons, but he did. Of course. So now what? I ask. We should probably go back to school. No, I mean us. I don't know what you want. I don't know if you're ready to be out, I say. But he taps along the creases in my palm with his thumb, and it makes me lose focus. His thumb stops tapping, and he looks at me, and then he twines his fingers through mine. I lean back, tilting my head toward him. I'm all in, if you are, he says. All in, I say? Like what? Like boyfriend? I mean, yeah, if that's what you want. That's what I want, I say. My boyfriend. My brown-eyed, grammar-nerd, soccer star boyfriend. And I can't stop smiling. I mean, there are times when it's actually more work not to smile. That night, as of 8:05, Bram Greenfeld is no longer single on Facebook, aka the best thing that has ever happened in the history of the internet. At 8:11, Simon Spear is no longer single either, which generates about 5 million likes and an instantaneous comment from Abby Suzo, like, 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 followed by a comment from Alice Spear, wait, what? Followed by another comment from Abby Suzo, call me. I text her and tell her I'll talk to her tomorrow. I think I want to keep the details to myself tonight. Instead, I call Bram. I mean, I almost can't believe I didn't have his number until yesterday. He picks up right away. Hi, he says, quickly and softly, like the word belongs to us. Big news on Facebook tonight. I sink backward onto my mattress. His quiet laugh. Yeah. So what's our next move? Do we keep it classy, or do we blast everyone's news feeds with kissing selfies? Probably the selfies, he says. But just a couple dozen a day. And we have to shout out our anniversary every week. Every Sunday. Well, and every Monday for our first kiss. And a couple dozen posts every night about how much we miss each other. I do miss you, though, he says. I mean, Jesus Christ. What a week to be grounded. What are you doing right now? I ask. Is that an invitation? I wish it was. He laughs. I'm sitting at my desk, looking through my window, and talking to you. Talking to your boyfriend. Yeah, he says. I can hear him smiling. Him. All right. Abby accosts me at my locker. I'm about to lose it. What the heck is going on with you and Bram? I look at her and smile as a wave of heat rises in my cheeks. She waits, and I shrug. I don't know why it's so weird talking about this. Oh my gosh, look at you. What? I ask. Blushing. She pokes my cheeks. I'm sorry, but you're so cute, I can't even stand it. Just go. Keep walking. Bram and I have English and algebra together, which basically amounts to 2 hours of staring longingly at his mouth and 5 hours of longingly imagining his mouth. Instead of lunch, we sneak into the auditorium. And it's strange seeing the stage stripped of the set for Oliver. The school talent show is on Friday, and someone's already hung spangled gold tassels in front of the curtains. We're alone in the theater, but it feels too big, so I take Bram by the hand and pull him into the boys' dressing room. Aha, he says as I fiddle with the latch. This is a doors-locked kind of activity. Yep, I say, and then I kiss him. His hands fall to my waist, and he pulls me in closer. He's only a few inches taller than me, and he smells like Dove soap. And for someone whose kissing career began yesterday, he has seriously magical lips. Soft and sweet and lingering. He kisses like Elliot Smith sings. And then we pull out chairs, and I twist mine around sideways so I can rest my legs across his lap. And he drums his hands across my shins, and we talk about everything. Little fetus being the size of a sweet potato. Frank Ocean being gay. Oh, and guess who was apparently bisexual? Bram says. Who? Casanova. Freaking Casanova? For real, he says. According to my dad. You're telling me, I say, kissing his fist, that your dad told you Casanova was bisexual? It was his response to me coming out. Your dad is amazing. Amazingly awkward. I love his wry smile. I love watching him relax around me. I mean, I love this. Everything. He leans forward to scratch his ankle, and my heart just twists. The golden brown skin on the nape of his neck. Everything. I float through the rest of the day, and he's all I can think about. And then I text him as soon as I get home. Miss you so much. I mean, it's a joke. Mostly. He texts back immediately. Happy 2-day anniversary! Which makes me cackle at the kitchen table. You're in a good mood, says my mom, walking in with Bieber. I shrug. She shoots me this curious half-smile. All right, well, don't feel like you have to talk about it. But I'm just saying, if you wanted to... Freaking psychologists. So much for not being weird and obsessed. I hear a car pull into the driveway. Nora's home already? I ask. It's funny, but I've gotten used to her being gone until dinner. I look out the window and do a double take. I mean, Nora's home. But the car... The driver... Is that Leah? I ask. Driving Nora? Appears to be. Okay, yeah, I have to go out there. Oh no, she says. Too bad you're grounded. Mom, I say. She tips her palms up. Come on, please. Already Nora's opening the car door. I'm open to negotiating, she says. For what? One night of parole in exchange for 10 minutes of access to your Facebook. Jesus Christ. 5, I say. Supervised. You got it, she says. But I want to see the boyfriend. So yeah, at least one of my sisters is about to get murdered. But first, Leah. I sprint out the door. Nora's face whips toward me in surprise, but I run straight past her, panting, as I reach the passenger side door. Before Leah can object, I pull it open and climb inside. Bram's car is old, but Leah's car is a Flintstones relic. I mean, it has a tape deck and crank windows. There's a line of plush anime characters on the dashboard, and the floor is always littered with papers and empty Coke bottles. And there's that floral grandmother smell. I actually sort of love Leah's car. Leah looks at me in disbelief. I mean, waves of stink eye roll off of her. Get the hell out of my car, she says. I want to talk. Okay, well, I don't. I click in my seatbelt. Take me to Waffle House. You're fucking kidding me. Not even a little bit. I lean back into the seat. So you're carjacking me. Oh, I say. I guess so. Fucking unbelievable. She shakes her head. But a moment later, she starts driving. She stares straight ahead with her mouth in a line, and she doesn't say a word. I know you're pissed at me, I say. Nothing. And I'm sorry about Midtown, I really am. Still. Will you just say something? We're here. She puts the car in park. The lot is almost empty. You can get your fucking waffle or whatever. You're coming with me, I say. Yeah, no. Okay, then don't. But I'm not going in without you. Not my problem. Fine, I say. We'll talk here. I unlatch my seatbelt and turn toward her. There's nothing to talk about. So what, that's it? We're just not going to be friends anymore? She leans back and shuts her eyes. Maybe you should go cry about it to Abby. Okay, seriously? I say. What the hell is your problem with her? I'm not trying to raise my voice, but it comes out booming. I don't have a problem with her, Leah says. I just don't know why we're suddenly best friends with her. Well, because she's Nick's girlfriend, for one thing. Leah whips her head toward me like I've slapped her. That's right. Keep making this about Nick, she says. And we can all just fucking forget that you're obsessed with her, too. Are you kidding me? I'm gay. You're platonically obsessed with her, she yells. It's cool, though. She's such a fucking upgrade. What? Female best friend 4.0. Now available in the prettiest, perkiest package ever. Oh, for the love of God, I say. You're pretty. She laughs. All right. Seriously, just stop it. I'm so fucking tired of this. I look at her. She's not an upgrade. You're my best friend. She snorts. Well, you are. Both of you. And Nick. All three of you, I say. But I could never replace you. You're Leah. Then why did you come out to her first? She says. Leah, I say. Just whatever. I don't have the right to give a shit. Stop saying that. You can give all kinds of shits. She's quiet. And then I'm quiet. And then she says, it was just so, I don't know. It was obvious that Nick liked her. None of that's been a fucking surprise. But when you told her first, it was like, I didn't even see that coming. I thought you trusted me. I do, I say. Well, apparently you trust her more, she says. Which is awesome, because how long have you known her? 6 months? You've known me for 6 years. And I don't know what to say. There's a lump in my throat. But whatever, she says. I can't, you know, it's your thing. I mean, I swallow. Yeah, it was easier to tell her. But it's not about trusting her more, or you more, or anything like that. You don't even know. My eyes prickle. It's like, yeah, I've known you forever, and Nick even longer. You guys know me better than anyone. You know me too well, I say. She grips the steering wheel and avoids my eyes. I mean everything. You know everything about me. The wolf t-shirts, the cookie cones, boom boom pow. She cracks a smile. And no, I don't have that kind of history with Abby. But that's what made it easier. There's this huge part of me, and I'm still trying it on. And I don't know how it fits together. How I fit together. It's like a new version of me. I just needed someone who could run with that. I sigh. But I really wanted to tell you. Okay. It's just, it got to the point where it was hard to bring it up. I stare at the steering wheel. I mean, I get that, she says finally. I do. It's like the longer you sit with some shit, the harder it is to talk about. We're both silent for a moment. Leah? Yeah? What happened with your dad? My breath hitches. My dad? I turn my head toward her. Well, it's kind of a funny story. Yeah? Not really. He hooked up with this haughty 19-year-old at his work, and then he left. Oh. I look at her. Leah, I'm so freaking sorry. I spent 6 years not asking that question. God, I'm such an asshole. Stop blinking like that, she says. Like what? Don't you dare cry. What? No way. Which is the moment I lose it. full-on, puff-eyed, snot-faucet crying. "You're a mess, Spear." "I know." I sort of collapse into her shoulder. Her almond shampoo smell is so perfectly familiar. "I really love you, you know? I'm so sorry about everything. About the Abby thing. All of it. It's fine. Really. I love you." She sniffs. "Did you get something in your eye, Leah?" "No, shut up. You did." I wipe my eyes and laugh. 34. From marty.mcflatison@gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, January 29th at 5:24 p.m. Subject, sorry doesn't even begin to cover it. "Hey, Spear. I'm assuming you hate me, which would make absolute sense under the circumstances. I don't even know where to begin with all of this, so I guess I'll just start by saying I'm sorry. Even though I know that sorry is a completely inadequate word, and maybe I should be doing this in person, but you probably don't even want to look at me, so I guess it is what it is. Anyway, I can't stop thinking about our conversation in the parking lot, and what you said about what I took from you. And I really feel like I took something enormous. It's like I didn't let myself see it before, but now that I see it, I can't believe the things I did to you. All of it. The blackmail, and you're right, it was actually blackmail. And the Tumblr post. I don't know if you realize, but I took the post down myself before the mods could even deal with it. I know that doesn't really make it better, but I guess I want you to know that. I just feel sick with guilt about the entire thing, and I'm not even going to ask you to forgive me. I just want you to know how sorry I am. I don't even know how to explain it. I'll try, but it's probably going to sound stupid, most likely because it is in fact stupid. You should know first that I'm not homophobic, and I honestly think gay people are awesome, or normal, or whatever you prefer. So that's all good and everything. Anyway, my brother came out over the summer, right before he went back to Georgetown, and it's been this huge deal with my whole family. My parents are trying to turn it into this big, awesome thing, and so now our house is like this gay utopia. But it's totally weird, because Carter's not even home, and he never actually talks about it even when he is home. My parents and I marched in the Pride Parade this year, and he wasn't even there, and when I told him about it, he said, okay, cool. Like, maybe it was a bit much. And maybe it was. And that was the weekend before I logged into your email. I guess I was in kind of a weird place. But I'm probably just making excuses, because maybe it was all about me having a crush on a girl and feeling desperate. And me being jealous of how a girl like Abby could move here and choose to befriend you out of everyone. And you have so many friends already. And I don't think you even get what a big deal that is. I don't mean to call you out or insult you or anything. I'm just saying that it seems like it's so easy for you, and you should know you're actually really lucky. So I don't even know if that makes any sense at all, and you probably stopped reading this ages ago, but I'm just putting all of it out there. And for what it's worth, I am so incredibly, impossibly sorry. Anyway, word on the street is that you are now deliriously happy in gay love with one Abraham Greenfeld. And I want you to know that I'm way beyond happy for you. You deserve it completely. You're an awesome dude, Spear. And it was cool getting to know you. If I could do it again, I would have blackmailed you into being my friend and left it at that. Extremely sincerely, Marty Addison. 35. The talent show starts at 7, and Nick and I arrive just as they're dimming the lights. Bram and Garrett are supposed to be sitting in the back toward the middle, with two seats saved. My eyes find him immediately. He's twisted all the way around in his chair, watching the door, then he smiles when he sees me. We squeeze through the row, and I sit beside Bram, with Nick and Garrett on either side of us. "Is that a program?" Nick asks, leaning over me. "Yep, want it?" Garrett asks, passing down an already worn cylinder of paper. Nick scans through the list of acts, and I know he's looking for Abby. Bet she comes on first or last, I say. He smiles. Second to last. And then the house lights shut off. The audience chatter tapers off as the stage lights come up, and student council Maddie steps up to the microphone. I lean closer to Bram. And because it's so dark, I slide a hand onto his knee. I feel him shift quietly as he laces his fingers through mine. He lifts them and presses his lips to the edge of my palm. He pauses, holding them there. And there's this fluttery yank below my navel. Then he lets our intertwined hands fall back onto his lap. And if this is what it's like having a boyfriend, I don't know why in God's name I waited so long. On stage, it's one girl after another, all in short dresses, all singing songs by Adele. And then it's Abby's turn, and she emerges from the wings, dragging a skinny black music stand to the edge of the stage. My eyes cut to Nick, but he doesn't see me. He's staring raptly forward, with straight posture and a smile edging his lips. A blonde sophomore girl steps out with a violin and sheet music. Then she tucks the violin beneath her chin and looks at Abby, who nods at her and inhales visibly. And the violinist starts to play. It's a strange, almost mournful version of Time After Time. Abby's movements convey every note. I've never watched anyone dance solo before, beyond the awkward showboating that happens when people circle up at bar mitzvahs. At first, I have no point of reference. In a group, you can look for synchronicity, but Abby controls her own motion, and yet every movement and gesture feels rich and deliberate and true. I can't help but look at Nick as he watches. He smiles quietly into his fist the entire time. Abby and her violinist finished a surprised, appreciative applause, and then the curtains close partially while the stage is set for the final act. They pull out a drum set, so I guess it's some kind of band. Maddie takes the mic and makes a bunch of announcements about various ways you can give the student council money. There are a few experimental twangs and booms from behind the curtain as the instruments are plugged in and tested. "Who is this?" I ask Nick. He checks his program. "They're called Emoji." "Cute." The curtain opens on five girls with instruments, and the first thing I notice is the colors. They're all wearing different patterned fabrics, and the colors are so bright that it's weirdly punk rock. And then the drummer kicks in with a fast, twitchy beat, which is when I notice that the drummer is Leah. I'm actually speechless. Her hair hangs past her shoulders, and her hands move impossibly quickly. And then she's joined by the other instruments, Morgan on the keyboard and Anna on the bass, Taylor on vocals, and my sister Nora on lead guitar, looking so relaxed and confident that I almost don't recognize her. I mean, I'm gobsmacked. I didn't even know she was playing guitar again. Bram looks at me and laughs. "Simon, your face." They cover Michael Jackson's Billie Jean, and I'm not even kidding. It's absolutely electric. Girls are getting up and dancing in the aisles, and then they transition straight into The Cure's Just Like Heaven. Taylor's voice is sweet and high and effortless, and it's somehow perfect. But I'm still so stunned. I can barely process it. Bram was right. People really are like houses with vast rooms and tiny windows. And maybe it's a good thing. The way we never stop surprising each other.
"Nora's not bad, right?" says Nick, leaning toward me. "You knew about this?" "I've been working with her for months, but she told me not to tell you."
"Seriously? Why?"
"Because she knew you'd make it a big deal," he said.
"I mean, that's my family. Everything's a freaking secret because everything's a big deal. Everything is like coming out. My parents were going to go nuts about missing this."
"Nah, I got them here," Nick says, pointing across the aisle, where I can see the backs of their heads a couple of rows up.
They're leaning toward each other with their heads together. And then I notice the messy knot of dark blonde hair sitting next to my mom. It's funny, but it almost looks like it could be Alice.
Nora smiles her tiny smile, and her hair is loose and wavy, and there's actually kind of a lump in my throat.
"You look so proud," whispers Bram.
"Yeah, it's weird," I say. Then Nora's hand stills against the body of the guitar, and Taylor stops singing, and everyone stops playing except Leah, who gets this pissed-off, determined look on her face. And then she launches into the most freaking awesome, badass drum solo I've ever heard. Her eyes are focused, and her cheeks are flushed, and she really looks so pretty. She'd never believe me if I told her. I turn to look at Bram, but he's turned the other direction, facing Garrett, and I can see from his cheeks that he's grinning. And Garrett shakes his head and smiles and says, "I don't want to hear it, Greenfeld." The song ends, and people yell and cheer as the house lights come on. There's a swell of movement out the back to the atrium, and we let it pass us. Abby comes out and finds us directly, and then a guy with brown hair and a short red beard slides into the empty row in front of us and smiles at me. "You're clearly Simon," he says. I nod, confused. He looks familiar too, actually, but I can't quite place him.
"Hi, I'm Theo."
"Theo like Alice's Theo?"
"Something like that," he says, grinning.
"Is she here? What are you doing here?" My eyes flick automatically to where my parents had been sitting, but their row was already empty.
"It's nice to meet you," I add.
"Likewise," he says. "So Alice is in the lobby, but she sent me in with a message for you and, Bram." Bram and I exchange glances, while Nick, Abby, and Garrett look on with interest.
"Okay," he says. "She wanted me to tell you that your parents are about to invite you to some place called the Varsity, and you're supposed to say you can't go. And the magic words are that you need to catch up on homework."
"What? Why?"
"Because," Theo says, nodding, "apparently it takes half an hour to get down there, and half an hour to get back, plus all the time spent ordering and eating."
"Which is completely freaking worth it," I inform him. "Have you had their frosted orange?"
"I have not," Theo says. "Though in fairness, I've spent a lifetime sum total of 5 hours in Atlanta. So far."
"But why doesn't she want me there?"
"Because she's giving you 2 hours at home unsupervised."
"Oh."
My cheeks are burning.
Nick snorts.
"Yep," Theo says, grinning briefly at Bram. "So I guess I'll see you guys out there." He heads toward the atrium. I look at Bram, and his eyes are lit with mischief. It's very un-Bram-like.
"Oh, were you in on this?"
"No," he says. "But I stand in support."
"I mean, it's a little creepy having my sister orchestrate the whole thing."
He smiles, biting his lip.
"But kind of awesome," I admit. So we head out to the atrium, and I make a beeline for Alice. Bram hangs back, standing with Nick, Abby, and Garrett.
"I can't believe you're here."
"Well," she says, "little Nick Eisner clued me in that something big was happening. But I'm sorry I missed the play last week, bub."
"It's fine."
"I met Theo," I say, lowering my voice.
"He's cool."
"Yeah, yeah," she smiles self-consciously.
"Which one's yours?"
"Gray zippy sweater next to Nick?"
"I'm lying. I've been stalking him on Facebook," she says, hugging me.
"He's adorable."
"I know."
And then the side door swings open, and the girls of Emoji step into the atrium. Nora actually yelps when she sees us.
"Allie!" she says. She launches toward her. "What are you doing here? Why aren't you in Connecticut?"
"Because you're a rock star," Alice says.
"I'm not a rock star," Nora says, beaming. My parents have a majorly Seuss-ish bouquet for her, and they spend about 5 minutes gushing about her guitar skills. And then they want to gush about the rest of the band and Abby, so we sort of converge into one big group. And Nora is talking to Theo, and my parents are shaking hands with Bram, and Taylor and Abby are randomly hugging. It's a surreal, wonderful scene. I walk over to Leah, and she grins and shrugs. So I give her this crushing hug.
You are a freaking boss, I tell her. I had no idea. They let me borrow some of the school drums. I've been teaching myself. For how long? About 2 years. I just look at her. She bites her lip. I guess I'm awesome, she says. Yes, I say. And I'm sorry, but I just have to hug her again. All right, she says, squirming a little. But I can tell she's smiling. So I kiss her on the forehead, and she turns unbelievably red. When Leah blushes, it's so hardcore. And then my parents walk over to propose a celebratory trip to the varsity. I should probably catch up on homework, I tell them. You sure, kid? Asks my dad. Want me to bring you back a frosted orange? Or two, says Alice. And then she grins. Alice tells me to keep my phone on so she can text me when they're on the way home. And you won't forget the Frosties. Simon, I believe this is known as having your cake and eating it too. Large ones, I say. Souvenir cups. There are probably 100 people still walking toward the parking lot. I'm riding back with Bram. It's too public to hold hands, this being Georgia. So I walk next to him, leaving a space between us. Just a couple of guys hanging out on a Friday night. Except the air around us seems to crackle with electricity. Bram is parked in the raised area of the parking lot, on the top level. He unlocks his car from the top of the stairs, and I walk around to the passenger side. Then the car next to me comes noisily to life, startling me. I wait for it to pull out before opening my door, but the driver doesn't move. And then I look into the window and see that it's Martin. We lock eyes. I'm surprised he's here, because he wasn't in school today, which means I haven't seen him since he emailed me. He rakes his hand through his hair, and his mouth sort of twists, and I just sort of look at him. I haven't written back to his email. Not yet. I don't know. But it's chilly outside, so I slide into the car, and then watch through the window as Martin backs out. Are you warm enough? Bram asks. I nod. So I guess we're going to your place. He sounds nervous. And it makes me nervous. Is that okay? Yeah, he says, eyes flicking to me. I mean, yeah. Okay, yeah, I say. And my heart pounds. Stepping into the entryway with Bram is like seeing it for the first time. The random painted wood dresser against the wall, overflowing with catalogs and junk mail. A creepy framed drawing of Alvin and the Chipmunks that Nora made in kindergarten. There's the muffled thud of Bieber jumping off the couch, followed by jangling and clicking as he skitters toward us. Well, hi, Bram says, practically crouching. I know who you are. Bieber greets him passionately, all tongue, and Bram laughs in surprise. You have that effect on us, I explain. He kisses Bieber on the nose and follows me into the living room. Are you hungry? I ask. Or thirsty? I'm fine, he says. We probably have Coke. I very badly want to kiss him, and I don't know why I'm stalling. Do you want to watch something? Sure. I look at him. I don't. He laughs. So let's not. Do you want to see my room? He smiles his mischievous smile again. So maybe it is Bram-like. Maybe I'm still figuring him out. Framed photographs line the wall by the staircase, and Bram pauses to look at each one. The famous trash can costume, he says. Nora's finest hour. I say. I forgot you knew about that. And this is you with the fish, right? So obviously thrilled. In the picture, I'm 6 or 7, sun-flushed, my arm extended as far away from my body as possible, dangling a caught fish from a piece of twine. I look like I'm about to burst into horrified tears. I've always loved fishing, I say. I can't believe how blonde you were. When we reach the top of the stairs, He takes my hand and squeezes it. "You're really here," I say, shaking my head. "So, this is it." I open the door and try to kick some of the clothes aside as we walk in. "Sorry about all of this." There's a dirty clothes pile next to the empty hamper, and a clean clothes pile next to the empty dresser. Books and papers everywhere. An empty bag of goldfish crackers on the desk, next to a non-functioning Curious George alarm clock, my laptop, and a plastic robotic arm. Backpack on the desk chair, framed vinyl album covers hanging askew on the walls. But my bed is made, so that's where we sit, leaning against the wall with our legs stretched forward. "When you email me," he says, "where are you?" "Usually here, sometimes at the desk." "Huh," he says, nodding. And then I lean over and kiss him softly on the neck, just below his jaw. He turns to me and swallows. "Hi," I say. He smiles. "Hi." And then I kiss him for real. And he kisses me back, and his hands fist my hair. And we're kissing like it's breathing. My stomach flutters wildly. And somehow we end up horizontal, his hands curved up around my back. "I like this," I say, and my voice comes out breathless. "We should do this every day." "Okay. Let's never do anything else. No school, no meals, no homework." "I was going to ask you to see a movie," he says, smiling. When he smiles, I smile. "No movies. I hate movies."
"Oh, really?"
"Really, really. Why would I want to watch other people kissing," I say, "when I could be kissing you?" Which I guess he can't argue with, because he pulls me in closer and kisses me urgently. And suddenly I'm hard, and I know he is, too. It's thrilling and strange and completely terrifying.
"What are you thinking about?" Bram says.
"Your mom?"
"No,"
he says, laughing. "But I actually am. Specifically, her every time, including oral rule. Because it only now occurs to me that the rule might apply to me. At some point. Eventually." I kiss him briefly on the lips.
"I really do want to take you out," he says. "If you didn't hate all movies, what would you want to see?"
"Anything," I say.
"But probably a love story, right? Something Simon-ish, with a happy ending."
"Why does no one ever believe I'm a cynic?" He laughs. I let my body relax on top of his, my head tucked into the crook of his neck. "I like no endings," I say. "I like things that don't end." He squeezes me tighter and kisses my head, and we lie there. Until my phone buzzes in the back pocket of my jeans. Alice. Exiting the highway. Be ready. Roger that. Thanks, Paul Revere. I rest my phone on Bram's chest while I type. Then I kiss him again quickly, and we both stand up and stretch. And then we each spend some time in the bathroom. But by the time my family gets home, we're sitting on the love seat in the living room with a pile of textbooks between us. "Oh, hi," I say, looking up from a worksheet. "How was it? Bram came over to study, by the way."
"And I'm sure you were very productive," my mom says.
I press my lips together, and Bram quietly coughs. I can tell from her expression that a conversation is coming. Some kind of awkward discussion about ground rules. Some kind of big deal. But maybe this is a big deal. Maybe it's a holy freaking huge awesome deal. Maybe I want it to be.
This is Michael Crouch. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Simon vs. the Homo Sapiens Agenda by Becky Albertalli. This program was produced by John Marshall Media.
Executive Producer, Caitlin Gary. Text Copyright 2015 by Becky Albertalli. Production Copyright 2015 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.